when you're live on camera and you're asking athletes questions, particularly when they're in high pressure environments, it can be quite a confrontational environment.
Hey everyone, I'm Katie Traxton and you are listening to Anatomy of an Agency, the podcast that takes you behind the scenes of everything that goes on in the talent industry. In this episode, we are joined by Lawrence Boyd. Lawrence is the Chief Content and Product Officer at the E1 Series, and in his 25 years as a producer in live sports broadcasting, he has worked with and hired talent across a huge array of sports. I started by asking him what the E1 Series is.
E1 Series is the world's first electric powerboat championship. We have teams owned by some of the biggest stars in sports and entertainment, from like Mark Anthony to Tom Brady to LeBron James to Steve Aoki.
Wow. And what exactly do you do for a job?
So I started off as a producer, and producers in TV particularly is a pretty much a catch-all. So we can write scripts, we can plan shoots, we can manage talent. And at E1, my role includes looking after the marketing, the social content, the broadcast content, and all the design for the series.
Crikey. And so how long have you been at E1? Have you worked across a number of different sports and championships and tournaments?
Well, I normally, when people ask me how many sports I've worked in, I say I've never worked in snooker or darts, but pretty much all the rest. So I started in 2001 in football, and then worked quite a lot in cricket and various other sports, and joined Sunset and Vine, who are one of the world's best production companies and cover loads of sports, including things like Commonwealth Games and Paralympics. So I've had the opportunity to work on loads of sports. But I started in motorsport with Formula E about 8 years ago. I was there for a few years, and when E1 was becoming a thing, I was contacted about 2.5 years ago and asked if I was interested in being involved. I started as a consultant, and about 6 months after that, I came in full time.
Right, so what I've deduced is that you're the person we need to talk to, because what we're trying to do is help people in the talent industry, whether it might be the athletes or competitors that you work with, whether it might be the people who are on camera, or whether it might be some of those celebrities you named who are getting more involved in the business side, with understanding how the complex world of sport works when you're on the business side of things. So can you tell me, what to start off with do you look for in anyone that you want to make part of your broadcast product? Whether that's an athlete getting a little interview, or whether it's someone who's giving the interview, whatever it is, what are you looking for?
So I'm in the business of telling stories. And what I'm really looking for are people who have great stories to tell, or who are really good at getting other people to tell their stories. Fundamentally, that's what we're about. We're about making people interested in the sport that's happening on the water in E1 through the stories of the athletes, the team owners, the people that are behind the scenes in the teams. So I'm looking for storytellers.
Do they come to you, or do you go and seek them?
There are sort of 3 or 4 different ways that you might be involved in E1 as sort of sporting talent or talent on screen. You might be part of Pilot Academy, which is how we select our athletes, and they come from all sorts of backgrounds. So some of them from powerboat racing, of course, but then we have people from jet ski racing, people who race cars, people who sail, and they go through a process where they learn how to race a boat, and then learn the intricacies of racing the E1 race bird, which is the boat that we race in our series, which is an electric foiling race boat. And then the teams can choose from the pool of athletes that we've trained.
Right.
But one of the things that we're looking for with the pool of athletes is not just their ability to race the boat fast, but also whether they make interesting content on screen. So we kind of cast them.
Oh, I had no idea. That is fascinating. So when you are casting them, is it that you're judging how they come to you? Or do they get some kind of media training? Do you kind of suss out their potential and what they could be? Or are you just looking at what they are?
So it can be a bit of any of those things. So it's great if they've got a social media following. We're a brand new sport, so trying to get publicity any way we can is important. And one of our drivers is a guy called Danny Kloss, who's a Formula F1 test driver. And he's got 1 million followers on Instagram and is just absolutely gold on camera. But then there are other people who have got much less experience on camera and much less experience in sport, but still have great stories to tell. So we have a 19-year-old Scottish pilot called Oban Duncan, whose background is powerboat racing. She's won all sorts of championships and titles, but she's only 19. She's not had much exposure to the media, but she has an incredible story. So it can be Danny Kloss at one end of the scale, who's got a million followers, or it can be Oban Duncan at the other end of the scale, who's never really been interviewed before, but has rich stories to tell.
And what about, because athletes often travel a lot to compete, and I think you're the first person we've actually spoken to, where you're probably doing an English-speaking broadcast, but where not all of the talent you're working have English as a first language. How do you make sure they're equally included, or what can they do to make sure they will be equally included?
So it's a great question. So there are 11 different nationalities in our pool of pilots out of the 18 pilots. It just so happens that nearly all of them do speak really good English. But our reporter is a lady called Alex Aljo, and she speaks English, Spanish, French and Italian all pretty well, and a bit of Portuguese too. So it was a definitely part of the decision-making process when we were hiring Alex, that she had this variety of languages, because we're creating a world feed. Primarily, the language is English when we're interviewing them, but if they don't speak great English, we still want to get them involved. So having languages is definitely a benefit as a reporter in our world.
And how do you find her? Is it just word of mouth? You know her? Presumably you don't do job ads. Are you scouring around LinkedIn to see who speaks which languages?
Yeah, no, it's not as scientific as that, actually. What we did is worked with Aurora, who are the production company who produced the world feed for E1, and did a bit of a talent search through their network. We had 5 or 6 different showreels in the final selection process, and then we did screen tests for them. And with Alex in particular, we screen tested her in 3 languages so that we could then share that with some of the wider stakeholders of the business and say, look, we found this really interesting lady. She speaks multiple languages. And so we screen tested her in Italian and Spanish as well as English, and sent that to some of the stakeholders and said, what do you think?
So if you're out there and you're thinking, okay, I want my big break, I want to prove that I'm up to this, and maybe you're thinking I'm going to target a younger sport because maybe they don't have such established talent, what is like healthy, proactive outreach to production companies or to rights holders, and what is too much? Like, what's the bundle I should be sending you, and what becomes you're taking out restraints because you think I'm a stalker?
Yeah, that's an interesting point. And so the first thing I'd say is, before you get to the point where you're being in touch with me or my production company or an agency around the edges of us, do some work. Go out, shoot some content, go to a sport event. Even if you're not working there, shoot a piece to camera in front of the sport that's going on. Shoot a few different locations, shoot a walk and talk, shoot an interview with somebody, even if it's your mum, just do something so that I can get an idea of what you're going to be like on camera. So that's the first point. Don't come to me before you've done any work. And the second point is, I think you have to be persistent and bold and brave and put yourself out there a bit and wait for someone to say, actually, it's too much, because they'll either ignore you, or they'll say, look, we don't have an opportunity right now. Or if you're lucky, your showreel lands on my desk at just the right moment and I'm looking for somebody and the timing is perfect.
And how much practical experience does someone need? You know, if someone's really young and you see a lot of potential, are you happy to go, they're young, we can actually teach them the way we do things, this could be really helpful? Or are you going, no, I kind of hope that even if it's at university or if it's with a community project, you have put some hours in to understand how production works, and then we'll hopefully elevate you into our system.
It's really, really hard to come into the world of live sports broadcasting without understanding it quite well. There's nowhere to hide. When you're live on camera and you're asking athletes questions, particularly when they're in high pressure environments, it can be quite a confrontational environment. You've got all sorts of things happening in your ear. You've got a director telling the cameramen where they're going next. You've got a producer busy trying to keep to a running order. And your role is to be calm, cool, and collected on camera. So if you don't know the dynamics of what's happening behind the scenes, I think it's really quite a tough job. So I would say that getting any kind of experience in production before you start to apply for jobs as a presenter or a reporter or a commentator, it would be really, really, really valuable.
Is that universal across all the sports you've worked in, or are there some sports where you go, actually, the pace of this, the style of the production is more suited to entry level and experimenting, and others, you really need to hit the ground running?
Well, there's, I think it's about a variety of roles as well. So if you're coming in as an expert pundit, and you have consumed loads of sports content and you're an absolute expert in your field, there's a chance that you could slip into a production at quite a high level and you're just answering questions about the area that you're already an expert. So it's, you know, that could work as a pundit. I think you could come in without much experience. But if you're looking to be a presenter or a reporter or a commentator, I think you need to understand the sort of discipline of the world you're going into.
What about crossing between sports? Because I've worked on a number of sports, but not all the sports. And it strikes me, but no one's ever asked my opinion, that in some sports, you really just need to be immersed in what is going on in everything in that sport. In other sports, you probably can work across three or four different ones, and your skills as a presenter, you know, are transferable in that way. Is that fair?
It is fair. And I think it also depends on like what platform and what the content is that you're working on. So, I mean, I think the Olympics is a really good example of an event where you have commentators who you might normally hear on horse racing or football who are suddenly doing curling or kayak racing. You know, they're talking to a broad sports audience. They're not talking to an expert sport audience, and they need to get a few key bits of information across them. What are the rules? How do you win this? What are you looking for as a viewer that might help you understand who's going to win this event? But if you're talking about a specialist sports channel, maybe like a horse racing channel, there's no way that somebody could come into that from another discipline and just pick up the sport and be an expert analyst or commentator or reporter. You really need to have deep, deep knowledge.
And what is the best way for talent, and this could be an athlete, it could be a pundit, commentator, presenter, what's the best way for them to get the best out of the team they're working with the production team, with their editors, with anybody else? How do they, rather than going, well, this is good enough and I showed up and nobody complained, actually come and ask the right questions to get to the next level and not end up just pigeonholed in one area and they do it and everybody goes home? Happy days.
So I think it's critical to be curious about your work that you've done and to ask people for their opinion, and ideally to ask them if they can watch a show back with you or if you can have a call to review how it went. Definitely watch back what you've done yourself. I know that can be quite hard. Nobody likes hearing themselves or watching themselves back, but it is so critical that you do that and that you're, first of all, introspective about how well you did, and secondly, that you ask people who are experts what they think and get them to be honest with you. It's very easy for a producer or an exec at a sport to say, no, you did fine and don't worry, you'll be on the next one, and then you might not ever hear from them again. But if you're persistent and ask them, where are the areas that I could improve? What did I do well? What did I do badly? I think those can make a big difference.
What about on the other side of the camera? So there can easily be people who've worked in the sports industry who aren't out there fantasizing about being in front of the camera, but they're fantasizing about being you. And they might have really useful insight because they're giving this feedback. They know what is good in the sport that they watch and they digest all the time because they've been athletes and they've watched themselves back playing. How do they get to a point where they have the baseline skills to start being able to have a conversation about being in a production team?
So I think that somebody who is an expert in any sport is already really incredibly well positioned to come in and help on a sports production. And that can be in all kinds of different roles. So in sports like darts, and I've worked in poker in the past, they have a role called the spotter. And the spotter's job is just to help the director, the producer, the rest of the production team know what's likely to happen next in the sport, whether that be where the next dart's going to go or what the likely outcome of the hand is in poker or in curling, where they're likely to try and land the next stone. So the expertise in a sport is really, really vital and can add a lot of value to a production. But also you need to understand how productions work to start to develop in your career. So be prepared to go in at quite an entry level. Be prepared to put in the hours, be the first one there, the last one to leave. Ask questions, be curious, but know that your expertise will be able to add a lot of value once you understand the technicalities of how a production works.
Does that role exist in any mainstream sports, or are there other ways into those?
There are loads of ways into mainstream sports, and I think that some of them can be a mixture of sort of front of camera and behind camera. So I used to produce the highlights of the cricket on Channel 5, and we had an analyst called Simon Hughes. And Simon Hughes used to do two or three pieces to camera in each of our hour-long highlight shows, talking about a specific part of the day's play and why something had happened. And he would build those packages with the technical team and the analysis team. So he'd use Hawkeye data, he'd use bits of video that they'd acquired during the day. He might go and then work with a camera crew out in the middle to try and frame how he was going to explain the particular bit of analysis that he was talking about for that day. So his role was very much in between production and presenting. But if he didn't understand the production elements, it would have been an impossible job.
And how competitive is it? I know it's competitive to get in, but once you're in, have you got a relatively safe seat if you're delivering well? Or are there always people chomping at your heels saying, I could do this role and I've got loads of other stuff I can offer as well?
The way that sports productions tend to work is that they're cyclical, and that we tend to have right cycles, so 2, 3, 4 years right cycles. And production companies or broadcasters will have a set of rights for a certain amount of time, and at the end of that period, they either might win them back again or another company might win them. If another company wins them, that's the time when change happens. And often a lot of the people who are working on that production will still work on that production. The sports production world is full of freelancers, so a lot of them will move from one production company to another when a contract changes hands. But when a contract changes hands, some roles will change, and that's a really good time to get in.
This is going to sound like a crazy question to you, given your job.
Right.
What is the difference between a production company and a broadcaster?
So a broadcaster can also be a production company, which is the first thing to say, which can be a bit confusing. So the BBC is a production company because it makes programmes, but is also a broadcaster because it puts programmes out on its network of audience touch points, whether that be TV or radio or online on iPlayer or the website. A production company doesn't have its own publishing, or usually doesn't have its own publishing. So it will just produce the content for a broadcaster or for multiple broadcasters. So, for example, in my world in E1, Aurora are the production company, and we distribute the content that Aurora produce for us to 32 broadcasters around the world, including CBS, ITV, and DAZN.
And within that mix of the rights holder, so you and your team, the production company and the broadcaster, who's choosing the talent?
Good question. And it depends on at what level. So I would regard anybody who works in production as talent, and anybody who's kind of got a creative role or a logistics role or a technical role, to me, they're all talent. Where there tends to be a sort of conversation between all three parties is around the on-screen talent and what people call the front desk talent. So that might be the director and the producer. The rest of the roles tend to be selected by one of the three specific people in that agreement. So if it's a technical role, there's usually a relationship between the production company and a facilities company, and they'll select the technical staff. If it's an on-screen role, that's where all three might get involved. And then if it's a sort of lower tier role that's not so audience facing or isn't the front desk of the production, maybe the production company selects that member of staff themselves.
When you're sitting together natting out who the on-screen talent are going to be, so it's a kind of bigger forum, how important is it, the potential chemistry between those people or the complementary skills?
I think it's incredibly important. So what I think about how TV productions should feel is that they should feel welcoming. You should feel like you're having a conversation with the audience when you're the production talent on screen, and you should feel as the audience that you're in expert hands. So if the camaraderie isn't right, if the chemistry isn't right between the presenters and it feels awkward, or they're disagreeing with one another in an uncomfortable way rather than the way which I like, which is like I think generally conversations between pundits should feel like the conversations people are having at home. So We are looking for chemistry when we're looking for to build teams, particularly between a, say, commentator and an analyst, or between a presenter and two pundits. You're looking for them to replicate the kind of conversations that people are having at home.
Right, so we want constructive conflict, not out and out rows, even though they go viral.
Well, yeah, that's interesting. So I think there are channels that play on those rows, and like, and we all understand now how important social media is to generate interest in sport and in sports productions and in sports broadcasters. So, you know, if Roy Keane's having a row with Gary Neville or Jamie Carragher, that creates great content and probably drives people to either their podcast or to watch the production itself. And it's not a bad thing for the Premier League if there's a great debate that's being amplified by a really interesting conversation on social. But in my world, I want people to be trying to have a reasonable conversation which increases the audience's expertise on a sport that they probably don't know very much about.
So last question. I think we can kind of assume that if you're a presenter, you're looking for the kind of best presenter for the job. When you're looking at a pundit, they tend to be ex-athletes, but presumably you're not necessarily looking for the best athlete, you're looking for the best pundit, and yet you've never seen them in that guise. What would make someone great as a pundit, almost irrespective of their sporting CV?
What makes a great pundit is somebody who's able to eloquently explain how their sport works and why one person or one team is better than another, or doing better than another, or doing better than expected, or doing less well than expected. To be able to cut through the jargon and really get to the essence of what you're watching. Like, when we're watching sport, what we really care about is, I want that team to win or that team to lose, and a pundit's job is to explain why.
Who is a pundit for? Because presumably there's this dual role of, they need to explain to new audiences, they need to not bore avid fans.
Yeah.
Who are they there for, and how do they strike that balance?
I think it's the trickiest dilemma in sports broadcasting is how do you not alienate an audience who's expert whilst being engaging and entertaining to an audience who doesn't understand the sport that they're watching or are watching for the first time. And the best pundits and commentators strike the balance really well. So the best example I can think of is when you're watching cricket and there's a decision review for an LBW, the commentator's job is to explain in as few words as possible what that means. Because if you get into the intricacies of how the leg before wicket rule works, then it's going to get pretty boring for both the new audience and the existing audience. If you can say, we're just looking to see if the ball is going to hit the stumps, then it's really clear and everybody knows what they're looking for.
So your pundits need to deliver this information concisely, impactfully, correctly. They need to know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
What about the energy they need to bring? Like, you don't need to be a school lesson, do you?
No, they need to be entertaining too. And I think that's absolutely critical. But I think the hard thing, generally, if you get into the pundit seat, you've got charisma and you've got some entertainment value. The thing that I found in sort of trying to develop talent who are supposed to be subject matter experts is the tricky thing is to help them to explain their sport in a way that somebody who's never used any of the jargon that's related to that sport before will understand.
Okay, so we get to keep the jokes, lose the jargon.
Keep the jokes, lose the jargon, or develop the audience's understanding. And I think if you use jargon, explain it, and that's fine. I think if your audience comes away after three or four shows knowing some of the intricate terms that you use within the sport, that's a great thing. That makes them feel empowered as viewers, and they're way more likely to engage and to talk about the sport and to watch again. But don't use it without explaining it.
Well, we try to keep Anatomy of an Agency as jargon-free as possible. Thanks to Lawrence for all of his advice on how to get into the sports broadcasting world. And thank you for listening to this episode of the podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and do get in touch via email, gvo@goodvibesonlytalent.com or @goodvibesonlytalent on social media. I'll speak to you next week on Anatomy of an Agency.